It's 2 a.m. Welcome back to the 2 a.m. Book Review Club, where we stay up late talking about books or talk about books that made us stay up late. So, apologies if my voice is not 100% back to normal. As I mentioned last week, I've been dealing with a very severe and unfortunate illness, and I am not 100% back to normal. So, apologies if it still shows up in my voice. But the good news is that I do not have the fan running this week. It's not as hot as it was last week. So, let's be thankful for small mercies. It is once again time for my monthly wrap-up, and also once again time for me to ponder how a month can seem both so short and also so endless. In May, I read 21 books, 7 mystery books, 6 romance books, 2 fantasy books, 2 historical fiction books, 2 contemporary fiction books, and 2 nonfiction books. So, probably to no one's surprise, mysteries and romance have once again dominated my reading life. Because, let's be honest here, I do tend to gravitate towards escapism when I read because there is nothing more escapist and relaxing than a really satisfying mystery or romance. Now, were all 13 mysteries and romances I read in May satisfying? Unfortunately, no. But I'm getting ahead of myself, so let's get into the wrap-up. Last month's wrap-up episode got a little long, so this month, I want to try something new. I'm going to kick things off with a speed round of books that I just don't have a lot to say about, books that I don't really have a lot of thoughts on, because we have 21 books to talk about. And if I don't have a lot to say about a book, then I don't want to spend too much time talking about it. Okay. Speed round time. Let's do this. Speed round book number 1, Surprise Me by Sophie Kinsella. Sophie Kinsella is best known for writing really funny books, and Surprise Me definitely starts out on a high note with a married couple who lead an idyllic life until the day they learn that they will likely live and therefore be married for another 68 years, at which point their perfect marriage falls into crisis. Surprise Me is one of those books that I think would make a brilliant and very memorable short story, but as a novel, I just wasn't invested enough in the characters or their marriage, and the book ended up feeling a little long. Speed round book number 2 is Summer Island by Kristen Hanna. I was looking for a heartwarming seasonal beach read when I picked this book up, but Summer Island is a book that is so focused on difficult relationships. There's an estranged mother and daughter, an estranged pair of brothers, there's lovers who went through a bad breakup years ago, and yet Summer Island was unsatisfying because it felt like these relationships were resolved unrealistically quickly and without any meaningful change in the characters. Ultimately, Summer Island ended up feeling a bit hollow to me, and I also didn't really like how the only gay character in this book is like this terminally ill martyr figure who only ever experienced pain and suffering, but maybe that part is just me applying a 2024 lens to a 2004 book. Speed round book number 3 is Pineapple Street by Jenny Jackson. This is a lighthearted family saga story about a New York City family who is 1% rich. Pineapple Street is basically just a story of rich people doing rich people things. The 300 pages in this book went by really, really quickly, and I would call it a perfect beach read book if that's something you're looking for. I did make an episode devoted entirely to this book, so definitely check that out if you want more of my thoughts on Pineapple Street. Speed round book number 4 is In the Woods by Tana French. I do actually have a lot of thoughts about this book, but like Pineapple Street, I already made an episode dedicated entirely to In the Woods. So here I'll just say that this book was an incredible reading experience. It is my favorite mystery book of the year so far, and it both blew my mind and broke my heart, which is everything I can ask for in a mystery book. I do feel like it would be irresponsible of me not to add that In the Woods can get very graphic and disturbing, so do be aware of that going in, but I loved this book so much, and I was very, very excited to learn that there are sequels, which will probably feature in future wrap-up episodes. If you are looking for your next epic, heartbreaking mystery book, I really, really recommend In the Woods. Speed round book number 5 is Love Light Farms by B.K. Borison. Okay, so this one is on me for reading a holiday romance in May, but Love Light Farms has had a lot of hype. I saw it was available on the new releases shelf at my library, and I decided to pick it up. Love Light Farms has a Christmas tree farm, it has fake dating, it has best friends, falling in love. It has a nosy small town, and unfortunately, it just didn't do very much for me. I liked the dynamic and the chemistry between the love interests, but I didn't really believe in or care very much about the progression of their relationship, and there just wasn't very much going on in this book other than the romance. There are a lot of people who love Love Light Farms, and I can see why, but romance is the most subjective of genres, and this particular romance just didn't work for me. Speed round book number 6 is Peril at End House by Agatha Christie. Since last year, I have been embarking on a personal reading journey where I read through all 30 plus books in Agatha Christie's classic mystery series, the Hercule Poirot books, and overall, it's been really fun. Peril at End House is one of the earlier books in the series. It's about a young woman whose life is in danger. There have been multiple attempts on her life, but she has no idea why or who could be out to get her, which is where our world-famous detective Poirot comes in. There were plenty of plot twists and red herrings in this book, and overall, Peril at End House is definitely a classic Agatha Christie book, and definitely also one of the more enjoyable Poirot books. Speed round book number 7 is another Poirot book. I read 2 of these in May, and this Poirot book, Cat Among the Pigeons, is one of the last books in this series because, yes, I'm reading them completely out of order. Cat Among the Pigeons is a boarding school mystery, which is a very fun mystery setting, but it is also one of the Poirot books where Agatha Christie tries to bring in international politics and espionage, and And the result, as usual, is kind of messy and chaotic and just not one of the Poirot books that I would recommend to people who are not trying to read through the entire series. Speed round book number 8 is Rules for Heiresses by Emily Howard, which is a steamy historical romance book. And all I'll say about this book is that it is so high on the steam factor that I didn't really feel the emotional connection between the love interests. Speed round book number 9 is The Club by Ellery Lloyd, which is a thriller set on an island that is home to an exclusive resort for the rich and famous. It's always a good time here. It's always a nonstop party on this island until the day that people on the island start dying. I listened to the audiobook for this one and I enjoyed it for the most part, although I did feel like it got repetitive, especially towards the end. It just kept emphasizing and expanding on points that I felt had already been made earlier. It was just kind of like, okay, I get it. You already discussed this earlier. Overall, The Club really reminded me of The Guest List by Lucy Foley, although I did enjoy that book more than this one. But if you enjoyed The Guest List, I would definitely suggest giving The Club a try. Speed round book number 10 is Playing It Safe by Ashley Weaver, which is the third book in the Electra McDonald series, which is a historical mystery series set during World War II. It takes place in England and it features a petty thief who is recruited by the British government as a spy. If I'm being honest, the mysteries in this series are always kind of basic and the historical setting isn't always convincing, but the reason I keep reading the books in this series is because I really, really enjoy the chemistry between Electra and her aristocratic handler, Major Ramsay. What can I say? I really, really enjoy an angsty will they, won't they dynamic, and I really enjoyed watching their relationship progress in Playing It Safe. And finally, speed round book number 11 is The Little Paris Bookshop, originally written in German by author Nina George and translated into English by Simon Pear. I listened to this one on audio and it was a really, really atmospheric listening experience. But as for the actual story, it was one of those heartwarming books I really, really wanted to enjoy. But honestly, I should have just DNF'd it because I wasn't having a good time. This book is all about love and loss and memory, and it's almost cinematic with all of these atmospheric French settings. I definitely think it would make a really good movie, but while I can understand how The Little Paris Bookshop is an international bestseller, I can understand how it spoke to a lot of people, why this book would matter to them. It ultimately just didn't do very much for me personally, and that's okay. Okay, that concludes our speed round, which leaves us with 10 more books to talk about. 2 romances, 2 mysteries, 2 fantasies, 2 historical fiction books, and 2 nonfiction books. Let's begin with the romances. Romance book number 1 is Payback's a Witch by Lana Harper, which, as you can probably tell from the title, is a paranormal slash witchy romance that takes place in a small town that is run by 4 powerful witch families. Witch dynasties. And we are following Emmy, a witch who left years ago but who has now returned in order to, well, one, play her hereditary role as arbiter for the town's big magical tournament, and two, to get some payback, some revenge on the guy who broke her heart all those years ago. And what I really appreciated about Payback's a Witch is that it manages to balance all of its different story elements really, really nicely. We have the small town politics and power plays of these four ruling witch families. We have a lot of world building regarding witches and magic. At the center of the plot, we have the magical tournament, and we also have the most adorable romance between Emmy and Talia. Talia being another witch who is basically the most goth of goth girls. The small town is so atmospheric and magical, and yet feels so real with its complicated power dynamics. I love a romance book with actual stakes. And overall, Payback's a Witch is not a perfect book, but it is one of the most emotional, fleshed out, magical romances I've read in a while, and I think it would make a really fun witchy book to read in spooky season. So, if this sounds like it might be up your alley, I would definitely suggest adding it to your spooky season TBR. Romance book number two is Half a Soul by Olivia Atwater, which is a historical fantasy romance, which I know is a bit of a mouthful, but that's what this book is because it takes place in Regency England, so historical, but there are fairies in this version of Regency England, so it is also fantasy. Half a Soul follows Dora, who, as the title suggests, has only half a soul because the other half was stolen from her as a child by an evil fairy. Having only half a soul means that Dora struggles to feel emotions and struggles even more to follow social conventions, which is obviously unacceptable in aristocratic Regency England's society. Then Dora meets Elias, the Lord Sorcier. I hope I pronounced that right. Who struggles even more than Dora does with fitting into polite society, because he knows that behind the facade of glittering balls and endless banquets, there are countless people in Regency England who are experiencing poverty and suffering. Like Payback's a Witch, Half a Soul is a book that has got a lot going on. There is social commentary on the enormous gap between the very rich and the very poor. There are evil fairies causing chaos who must be stopped. Dora has to learn that just because she has only half a soul doesn't mean she's only half a person. And of course, there is also the sweet and very romantic romance between Dora and Elias. Speaking of the romance, I still think about that one ballroom scene. If you know, you know, because it is the most romantic thing I have read in a very long time. But unlike Payback's a Witch, I didn't think the story elements in Half a Soul were as well balanced. The social commentary in particular ended up feeling kind of like a dead end. But overall, Half a Soul is very inventive, very heartfelt historical romance, and I think I would probably recommend it to people who enjoyed the Wisteria Society of Lady Scoundrels, although I will say Half a Soul is not funny like the Wisteria Society of Lady Scoundrels is. Moving on to our mysteries, we have one mystery book I really enjoyed and one mystery book that was really, really disappointing. Beginning on a more positive note, we have the mystery book I really enjoyed, which is Murder at Midnight by Catherine Shellman. Murder at Midnight is the fourth book in the Lily Adler series, which is set in Regency England and features Detective Lily Adler, an upper-class widow who uses her elevated social position in order to solve murders. The Lily Adler series is my favorite cozy historical mystery series because I love the historical depth and nuance. I love how complex and well thought out the mystery plots are. And I also love how I'm always able to eventually figure the mystery out. It gives me that dopamine hit I crave when I read mystery books. Murder at Midnight is a holiday-themed mystery. It takes place at a snowed-in mansion during a Christmas party, which sounds cozy and festive until it turns out there's a killer hiding in their midst. I did figure this mystery out as well, although there was a twist at the end that I did not see coming, which was fun. And I'm very excited to continue reading this series when the next book comes out. If you're looking for a cozy historical mystery series, I would highly, highly recommend trying out the Lily Adler series, beginning with book one, The Body in the Garden. And now for the mystery book that really, really, really disappointed me, which was The Fiction Writer by Gillian Cantor. As the title suggests, this book is about a fiction writer. Her name is Olivia Fitzgerald, and her career is floundering after her retelling of the classic novel Rebecca flopped. Olivia decides to take on a write-for-hire job, which takes her to the Malibu mansion of a sexy billionaire who wants her to write the story of his grandmother, who he claims was the real Rebecca. The Fiction Writer, at first glance, seems to be one of those fast-paced thrillers with a fun premise and a bit of meta flavoring that you can blow through in an afternoon and never think about again, and that was what I was expecting, so why was it so disappointing? Well, for one thing, I officially diagnose our protagonist, Olivia, with the fatal literary disease of too stupid to live. Basically, the entire book is Olivia showing up at the sinister Malibu mansion, asking Mr. Sexy Billionaire for details about this project that she's supposed to be doing, and having Mr. Sexy Billionaire be like, "Never mind about the project I'm paying you ridiculous amounts of money to do. Here, have some wine that may or may not be drugged." And I get that the author is trying to pull off a story about a manipulative mastermind who you know you shouldn't trust, but end up trusting anyway because he's just so charismatic. Like, I get that that's what the author is going for, but the thing is, if you want your character to be a manipulative mastermind, then you have to make them smart enough and charismatic enough to, you know, manipulate the reader. Unfortunately for this book, The Fiction Writer, Mr. Sexy Billionaire is so flat and so uncharismatic and so unintelligent that it's frankly unrealistic that anybody would be manipulated by him unless they were, as I said, too stupid to live. I was really looking forward to The Fiction Writer, but it was unfortunately really disappointing, especially the last third or so. Talk about an anticlimactic ending for a thriller. And even though the chapters are so short that you can read it in no time, I really don't recommend picking up this book. And now, let's move on to historical fiction, because I read two very exciting historical fiction books in May, and I have been waiting very, very impatiently to talk about them. Historical fiction book number one is The Warm Hands of Ghosts by Catherine Arden, which just came out a couple of months ago and which I was so excited to find on the new releases shelf at my library. Because believe it or not, generally speaking, the actual new releases don't tend to stay on the new releases shelf for very long. The Warm Hands of Ghosts takes place during World War I, and it follows Laura, a Canadian combat nurse who was wounded and discharged, but who has decided to return to the horrific battlefields of Europe in order to discover what really happened to her brother Freddie, who was reported missing under mysterious circumstances. The Warm Hands of Ghosts is one of those books that truly has everything. A grimly realistic portrait of the time period, an exploration of the intense relationships we form when the world is falling apart around us, and yes, as the title suggests, The Warm Hands of Ghosts does also have a supernatural element as well. I am fascinated by World War I books. There should be more of them, and I was so invested in the relationships between the characters when I was reading this book. At its heart, The Warm Hands of Ghosts is about dealing with the pain of memory, of remembering things, especially since memories, no matter how painful, are ultimately what bind us to the people we love. This was such an immersive, painful, and yet ultimately uplifting reading experience. I definitely recommend it to people who are interested in World War I fiction, although there is that supernatural element. But I will say that I'm a little surprised that given how impactful the reading experience was, in hindsight, it's not as memorable in the long term as I thought it was going to be. Also, despite the title, The Warm Hands of Ghosts does not have any ghosts. So I feel like that is a PSA for ghost story lovers everywhere. And historical fiction book number two is Daisy Jones and the Six by Taylor Jenkins Reid, which I listened to on audio, and what an experience. First off, the performances in this audiobook were incredible, but also the story broke my heart in the best way possible. I feel like this is how I was supposed to feel about The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, which is the Taylor Jenkins Reid book everyone loves, but which I couldn't connect to the characters emotionally. And now, having listened to Daisy Jones and the Six, I finally get the Taylor Jenkins Reid hype, because this book was such a great blend of things I love reading about. There's an immersive historical setting, there's an exploration of art and how it's created, there's complex characters, and there are explosive dynamics between those characters. Daisy Jones and the Six is apparently inspired by the real-life band Fleetwood Mac, but I didn't have any background knowledge of this band or really of classic rock at all, and I still really enjoyed the book. I will say that because Daisy Jones and the Six is structured as an oral history, I think it probably does work best as an audiobook. It might be a bit annoying to try to read the physical book, but overall, I was blown away by how much I enjoyed Daisy Jones and the Six, how much it emotionally impacted me, and I'm really happy to finally get the hype around this author. And now, moving on to the two fantasy books I read in May, I have two books here with a lot of hype, one of which I enjoyed, and one that was a little disappointing. Just so that I can end on a positive note, the fantasy book that was a little disappointing was Gods of Jade and Shadow by Silvia Marino Garcia. This book is inspired by Mayan mythology, and it is also set in Mexico during the Jazz Age. So, historical fantasy, which sounded right up my alley. It sounded like the kind of book I really enjoy reading. And then I started listening to the audiobook, and I realized that I, unfortunately, could not stand the protagonist. Gods of Jade and Shadow starts out as a Cinderella story with this girl who has been forced to slave after her rich, nasty relatives for her entire life. But of course, she's strong and resilient and sassy, and she breaks out of her old life to go on an adventure. The protagonist just came across as very immature and very much like a young adult protagonist, which is not a bad thing, let me be clear, but it wasn't what I was expecting because I had the impression that this was an adult fantasy book and not a YA fantasy book. Also, Gods of Jade and Shadow is a road trip book, which on the one hand is fun because you get to see so many different places, but on the other hand, I don't really like road trip stories. I tend to prefer books where you get to know a single place in depth. Now, here's what I will say about Gods of Jade and Shadow. If you loved reading What the River Knows by Isabel Ibanez, then this book will be perfect for you. I picked up What the River Knows earlier this year and ended up not finishing it because the protagonist was just getting on my nerves, if I'm being honest. She just felt shallow and immature and just not a character with a lot of complexity or nuance. And like I said, she felt very YA, but she has almost exactly the same personality as the protagonist of Gods of Jade and Shadow. So if you liked What the River Knows, you need to pick up Gods of Jade and Shadow. And I think it goes the other way as well because a lot of people did love Gods of Jade and Shadow. And if you loved this book, I really think you should read What the River Knows. Those two books have a lot in common. They both have a lot of fans, and unfortunately, I just cannot count myself amongst them. And now for the fantasy book, which I did enjoy, which was The Last Graduate by Naomi Novik, and this is the second book in her Scholomance series. The Scholomance is a school for magical children in England, which I know you're thinking sounds a lot like Hogwarts, but it's more like Hogwarts if Hogwarts was actively trying to kill you the entire time. Also, where Harry Potter's central message is that change is bad and the wizarding world is fine the way it is. The Scholomance series is instead about questioning existing power structures and trying to bring about systemic change so that wizarding society benefits everyone, not just the rich and privileged and powerful. Now, as we all know, I generally prefer character-driven books, but the Scholomant series very much prioritizes the world building and the lore and the non-stop action sequences, which is a nice change of pace for me sometimes. It's good for me to read a wide variety of books, and I just really enjoyed reading the second book in this YA fantasy series, which is best known for the first book in the series, A Deadly Education. I will note that the first person point of view narration has a very distinctive voice that will not be for everyone, but personally, I just enjoyed going along on the ride that is The Last Graduate. And if this sounds interesting to you, then I would recommend picking up the first book in this series, A Deadly Education. And now we are in the home stretch with just two more books to talk about, both of them nonfiction. Nonfiction book number one is Medieval Bodies, Life and Death in the Middle Ages by Jack Hartnell. This is a gorgeously illustrated overview of, you guessed it, life and death in the Middle Ages. Although it tends to focus more on the life part rather than the death part. I found it very readable and very interesting, but I didn't pick it up for its entertainment value, if that makes sense. I read it as preliminary background research for a book project I'm working on. So, unless you're very, very interested in the Middle Ages, I probably wouldn't recommend it. But if you are very interested in life in the Middle Ages, like I said, it's gorgeously illustrated and easy to read. So, in that case, I would recommend it, I guess. And nonfiction book number two, the last book in this May wrap-up, is Shakespeare Was a Woman and Other Heresies: How Doubting the Bard Became the Biggest Taboo in Literature by Elizabeth Winkler. And I cannot express enough how much this book blew my mind, because I was familiar with the debate about who Shakespeare really was. But before reading this book, I had kind of considered it a bit of a conspiracy theory, you know, like kind of an intellectual puzzle, just like a fun thing for people to engage with. Before reading this book, I had no idea that the case against William Shakespeare, you know, the guy from Stratford-on-Avon, being Shakespeare the playwright, was so strong. I had no idea that we have no real evidence that William Shakespeare, the historical figure, ever wrote a play or could even read or write. Shakespeare Was a Woman was fascinating. I might even say life-changing. It made me think about Shakespeare and literature and the creation of art and posthumous fame. And I really, really, really enjoyed reading it. I will say that the title is kind of clickbait, because the theory about Shakespeare being a woman, you think that that's central to the book, but actually it's just kind of mentioned in passing in the second half. And the Shakespeare candidates that the book focuses on mostly are just like men. And if you want to know who I think Shakespeare really was, I'm going to cast my vote for Christopher Marlowe, which is like the most conspiracy theory out there. But I will say, I will not be surprised if it turns out to be the Earl of Oxford. But if you've ever been interested in the Shakespeare question, or even if you've never thought about doubting who Shakespeare really was, I would definitely recommend this book, Shakespeare Was a Woman. It's so interesting and eye-opening and honestly kind of life-changing because I will never, ever think about Shakespeare the same way again. And those are all 21 books I read in May. I think this month's wrap-up was a bit more reasonable in length. I do apologize because I know my voice has given out several times during this episode, but like I said, I'm still not 100% back to normal yet, but hopefully I will be very soon. And that's going to be everything for this episode. This has been the 2 a.m. Book Review Club. Thanks so much for joining me, and I will be back next week at 2 a.m. Until then, have a great week and happy book travels.